Question of the study. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So thank you all for coming to the Sunday program on this special day of daylight savings time. See, we're all trying to save time for the most essential things because time is running out. But what are we saving our time for? So today's topic, we're going to talk about real knowledge. And in order to talk about that, we have to talk about the Vedas. And this includes both material and spiritual knowledge. As Prabhupada explained, knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. So knowledge and spiritual advancement, they go hand in hand. They're actually inseparable. So that means that the more spiritually advanced we become, the more we become aware of how Krishna is in everything. How he's in the material energy, how he's in the spiritual energy. So we're going a little personal journey and a little journey through the Vedic scriptures. We can discuss a little bit of this. It's a very vast topic. So we'll just maybe touch a little bit to kind of spark your interest and maybe enthuse you a little bit. So the Vedas actually teach us where we should be going, or, you know, telling us that, do you really know where you're going, or where are you going? So that's our topic today. And this is the Vedas, and this is going to show what they offer. So who remembers a time when you realize that there's something wrong here? Either with my body or some people or this world. And it reminds me of when I was younger, used to go for drives with my father. We used to have a little farm, and we used to go back and forth. It was about 15 miles from the city where we lived. So we talked in one time, and he was telling me, son, you know, by the time you get enough brains to live right, it's already too late. You're half dead. So it was like an eye-opener, like a shocking thing to me. It's like, it told me a lot. It's like something just happened right there. It's like, geez, it tells me a lot about my father. You know, what does he know? And what does he mean by that? And it means that there is something wrong here. How do we live right? And that's where we're going. We're going to die. So it kind of struck me that something was wrong. So that's what we're doing here, aren't we? We're just trying to figure things out. We're just trying to be, you know, happy here in this mature world. You know, we want to become powerful, beautiful, protected, in so many different ways like that. But it struck me what my dad said. So I was like thinking, you know, time is running out, and then there's death, and then that's it. There's got to be something more. And then I was thinking, aren't we taught like life skills, right, in school, you know, at home? You know, how to blow your nose so that you don't blow out your eardrums, or, you know, how to tie your shoe. Actually, just that one skill, how to tie your shoe. Actually, you know, my life is pretty much half over. And I just recently learned that, you know, have you noticed sometimes you tie your shoes and they come loose? You know, you have the bow knot like this, tie a bow knot like that. So I just realized how, you know, instead of tying like you normally do, just tie the bow over and then pull it, you tie it under and pull it, and then it doesn't come loose. So I just figured that out. So it goes to show you what there is to learn in this world. But actually, it's more than just tying knots and shoelaces. But just that simple thing, knowing a technique, you know, how to get along and do things like that. So this is what the Vedas teaches, techniques, simple techniques that we can learn so that we can actually get along here and advance. So it's very difficult to understand everything. It took that long just to find out how to tie your shoes properly. What to speak of, you know, trying to understand other things more complicated or essential things. What to speak of the time? We don't have time. As my father said, you know, it's time is going. You know, by the time you figure it out, it's already too late. So then I began to wonder, you know, as I got older, how do I live right? Am I eating properly? Exercising properly? Is this right? Should I do this? Should I do that? You know, why am I here in this body? You know, why do I have to die? Why do I have to get sick? I even asked a doctor one time, I said, why do I have to get sick? Why does this happen? And he said, well, if you knew that, you wouldn't be here. And I was thinking, I wonder if I could figure that out. So isn't that what we're doing? We're trying to learn how to live happy here, right? So how are you all doing with that? As they say, good luck with that. You know, anyone got enough brains yet to figure out how to not get diseased, not get old? They found the special elixir to avoid accidents or dangers, found ways to always be happy. Srila Prabhupada actually said, so every intelligent person should know that the danger is there. Dukkhalayam asasvatam. It's a place of miseries and it's temporary. I do not want danger. Then how to stop it? That is intelligence. So if we do not try to stop the danger, then we are not better than the animal. And this is Prabhupada. He doesn't hold any punches. And we'll notice as we travel through the Vedic scriptures, they don't hold any punches either. They actually tell us the truth the way it is. And it may be shocking, you know, even more shock than understanding by the time you get enough brains to live right. You know, you're already half dead. So, we're trying to find real, perfect, complete knowledge before it's too late. We want to save time, just like there's daylight savings time. What are they saving it for? But we want to make the maximum result in the shortest amount of time. And this is intelligence. Here's an interesting quote I found. As we're always preparing to be happy, it is inevitable that we should never be so. That was by Pascal. There is no more fatal blunder than he who consumes the greater part of his life getting his living. This is Thoreau. And this is that Dutch proverb that was very similar to my dad's. We grow too soon old and too late smart. So this is real human life. We must be inquisitive to understand what the absolute truth is. That's Brahma Jignasya. Not inquiring in the market about what is the share of this, what is the price of this, you know, how do I get this, all like that. No, this is not inquiry. We have to inquire beyond this material nature. We have to inquire into the absolute truth, into something that is beyond, something that we can't see. So this material nature is considered to be like darkness. So how can we see in the dark if we're just simply focused on material things? So somehow or another, we have to get some light, some knowledge. And this is what the Vedic scriptures are like. They're like a torchlight, and they could give us this knowledge. In fact, the Vedic injunction is asato ma sadgama, is that don't try to remain in this temporary world. Sadgama, just try to go to the eternal world. Tamasoma jyotirgama. Don't try to remain in darkness, but go to the kingdom of light. These are Vedic injunctions. So Krishna's in our heart, and if we actually become inclined towards Krishna, and then from within the heart, Krishna will become favorable for us, to us, and give us instructions so that we can gradually make progress. Even Dhruva Maharaj, he was very much interested in materialistic things. But when he actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead, face to face. He could understand that everything in this mature world, his life force, all his bodily limbs, his mind, and all the facilities that he had were considered to be sleeping. They were like in darkness. So unless one's spiritually situated, all his activities are considered to be like a dead man's activities or ghostly activities. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sings a very nice song. He's addressing himself. O living entity, get up. How long shall you sleep on the lap of Maya? Now you have the opportunity of possessing a human form of body. Now try to get up and realize yourself. So these are the Vedas that are telling us to get up. Get up. You have the opportunity, this great boon of your human form of life. So realize yourself. And these are the Vedic injunctions. They want us to go from darkness to light. And this is where the spiritual master comes in. They enjoin us that we should get this light from the Guru. As we say before each class, Om Ajnana Tumananda Shah Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmilitam Yena Tasmay Shri Guruve Namaha. That I was born in the darkness of ignorance. And my spiritual master opened my eyes with a torch of knowledge. I offer my obeisances unto him. So this is the Guru's business, is to give us light of knowledge. He's completely assimilated the Vedic scriptures, and therefore he can give them to us. And simply this, by this hearing process, we can actually understand. And Krishna comes within as the scriptures. He's in the heart, revealing to us. It says in the Bhagavad Gita, out of compassion for them, I dwelling within their hearts, destroy the shining lamp of knowledge, born of ignorance. So jnana is there, and it's covered now by this curtain of ignorance, by this darkness. And light is also there. But when we're in the darkness, we can't see the light. So we have to actually turn the light on. We have to become more and more associated with the light. And this is with the Vedic scriptures. So today's verse, we're going to find out what the Vedas have to say. Let's read a Bhagavad Gita verse today. This is from the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and this is verse 10. Ukramantam sitam vapi punjanam vagunan vitam vimudha nanu pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusaha. Something got cut off there. That was the last part. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Purport. The word jnana chakshusa is very significant. Without knowledge, one cannot understand how a living entity leaves his present body, nor what form of body he is going to take in the next life, nor even why he is living in a particular type of body. This requires a great amount of knowledge understood from the Bhagavad Gita and similar literatures heard from a bona fide spiritual master. One who is trained to perceive all these things is fortunate. Every living entity is quitting his body under certain circumstances. He's living under certain circumstances, and he's enjoying under certain circumstances, under the spell of material nature. As a result, he is suffering different kinds of happiness and distress. Under the illusion of sense enjoyment, persons who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their state in a particular body. They cannot comprehend it. Those who have developed spiritual knowledge, however, can see that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying in different ways. A person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material existence. Therefore, those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best to give this knowledge to the people in general, for their conditioned life is very much troublesome. They should come out of it and be Krishna conscious and liberate themselves to transfer to the spiritual world. So this is just one verse from the Bhagavad Gita, and there's many nice verses like this that give us insights about our position and why we're here, how we got this particular body, why we have a particular ear, you know, how you get a particular body. And there's another verse in the same chapter which just says how Krishna is actually seated in one's heart. And from him is where this remembrance, knowledge, and even forgetfulness comes. Because Krishna is so kind, if you want to forget him, he will give you that forgetfulness so that you can try to think you could be happy in this material illusory energy. But he says also in that verse that by all the Vedas I am to be known, that he is a compiler of the Vedanta and he is the knower of the Vedas. And there's one more verse in this chapter, the last verse, which is very nice. It says, "This is the most confidential part of Vedic scriptures, O sinless one, and it is disclosed now by me. Whoever understands this will become wise, and his endeavors will know perfection." So here we're getting a clue. We're learning how to live properly, how to live right. We're always trying to be perfect. So these are giving us the clues, the Vedic scriptures. And Prabhupada gives a very nice purport. I'll just read part of that purport. The Lord clearly explains here that this is the substance of all revealed scriptures, and one should understand this as it is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, one would become intelligent and perfect in transcendental knowledge. In other words, by understanding this philosophy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engaging in his transcendental service, everyone can become free from all contaminations of the modes of material nature. Devotional service is a process of spiritual understanding. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness is called devotional service. And this is what we're doing. We're coming to a spiritual understanding. Wherever devotional service exists, the material contamination cannot coexist. Devotional service to the Lord and the Lord himself are one and the same because they are spiritual. Devotional service takes place within the internal energy of the Supreme Lord, and the Lord is said to be the sun, and ignorance is called darkness. Where the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. Therefore, whenever devotional service is present under the proper guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, there's no question of ignorance. So Prabhupada encourages here to take up Krishna consciousness and become free from all these reactions, of all this darkness, and actually become perfect and gain your rightful heir into the spiritual world. So what are these Vedas that we're talking about? Why should we listen to these Vedic scriptures? Why are we so much emphasizing the Vedas? Because Vedic knowledge is actually infallible. It comes down through a disciplic succession, which is perfect, of spiritual masters that begin with the Lord himself. The Krishna is actually the source of all this Vedic knowledge, and he hands it down through all his representatives. Now, a living being in the material world, he has four defects. One of them, he's certain to commit mistakes. All of us know that we've made so many mistakes in our lives. The second one is that he's subject to illusion. We've been so illusioned by so many different things, that we're this body or you know, things that we thought were ours that were going to bring us happiness, but they didn't. They let us down. And the third thing, that he has a propensity to cheat others. Just like so many people claim to know what real knowledge is or how to attain happiness. But yet they're cheaters if they're not actually teaching you the real science of Krishna consciousness or devotional service to Krishna. And then the fourth thing is that our senses are imperfect. So with all these four imperfections, how is it possible to get perfect knowledge? So therefore, the Vedas come from a perfect source. They don't come from any material human form or source. But they actually come from a pure spiritual world. They're actually handed down from the spiritual world. And the Vedas, they're considered to be like our mother. They teach us things that we can't really understand or see. Prabhupada uses the analogy, just like if you don't know who your father is, how would you find out? One way you could find out is go around asking everybody, are you my father? Are you my father? Are you my father? It could take so long. We don't have time. Or you could just ask an authority, your mother. She would know. And then she just reveals, this is your father. And you just accept that. There's no way you can argue. So in the same way, we can't understand some things beyond our senses. So therefore, we accept the Mother Vedas, and they teach us these things that we can't perceive and understand. So this Krishna consciousness movement is completely authorized from these Vedic principles. And the Bhagavad Gita says, the actual aim of Vedic research is to find Krishna. Even in the Brahma Samhita, it's stated, Krishna Govinda has innumerable forms, but they're all one. They are not like our forms, which are infallible. His forms are infallible. They have no beginning. They are unlimited. So Krishna is everywhere. He's unlimited. He's very powerful. So he's in our heart. He's in his Vedic scriptures. He comes in so many different ways so that we can understand him. So we're very fortunate. All the Vedic scriptures are available to us in their essential form. Just like I said, it takes so much time to understand things. What to speak of trying to understand the Vedic scriptures? But we have the essence of the Vedas available to us right now. The most quintessential essence, the cream of the essence, in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva, who wrote all the Vedic scriptures, he wasn't satisfied in writing all these literatures. Actually, the Vedic scriptures include everything, material knowledge, spiritual knowledge, everything, knowledge about health, even military knowledge, political science, all the knowledges in the Vedas. He wrote all these different knowledges and different sacrifices, on different yajnas, things like that, but he wasn't satisfied until Narada Muni appeared to him and mentioned to him that the reason why you're not satisfied is because you're not directly glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is the essence of the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. We read that verse from the 15th chapter, that Krishna, that's the whole purpose of them. So we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vyasadeva summarized all the Vedic literatures into the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's available right now. You could get it in book form, you could get it in digital form, you could get it in audio form, you know, where you can just constantly be absorbed and become free from this darkness. So what about this material knowledge? We talked about some spiritual knowledge, but what about material knowledge? You know, this last Rath Yatra, how many people were there last Rath Yatra? Probably a lot of people were there. Did you notice that one of the carts kind of broke down? Yeah, some people, it happened, I was way up ahead, but then I heard about it. And, one of the Rath Yatra wheels was coming loose. So, some devotee told me that some person made a snide remark about the devotees not knowing anything about these things, how to fix these things. What do they know, you know? And then someone corrected them and said, you don't understand, you know. I'm not sure what he said, but that person certainly didn't realize that the devotees are actually the ones that built this cart, designed the cart, and put it together. What to speak of getting a bolt to put the wheel back on. So, you know, Prabhupada says that ordinary people, they may condemn the Lord's devotees as ignorant fools, but the truly learned never do so. As Prahlad Maharaj states, one who has dedicated his life to Krishna through the nine methods of bhakti should be understood as the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. But in the Kali Yuga, out of ignorance, people mock the saintly devotees and praise demoniac leaders in government, entertainment, and sports. Taking courage from the examples of saints like King Kulshekar and others, the devotees should not be ashamed when ordinary people disrespect them. They should be very concerned, however, that the Vaishnavas and the Supreme Lord are pleased with their behavior. So we know even Narada Muni was condemned, you know, for his devotional activities. Daksha cursed him, but he still went on and preached, kept up like that. There's a nice lecture I was listening to where Srila Prabhupada said, not that because he has become Krishna conscious and Vaishnava, he is unable to do anything of this material world. No, one who is Krishna conscious, he is conscious of everything and he knows how to deal with them. That is called daksha. That's expert. Not that because I have become Krishna conscious, I have no knowledge in other things. No, you must have. If not complete, to know something of everything. That is intelligence. To know something of everything and to know everything of something. That is wanted. Prabhupada says, to know something of everything and to know everything of something, that is wanted. You may be expert, a devotee. You know everything of devotional service. But you should not be callous. You know something of everything. That is called daksha. So you can see how it's not that you're losing by becoming a devotee. You actually gain more knowledge and you learn so many different things. You become expert. Krishna actually empowers devotees like that. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur warns us in this connection. He says that we should not mistakenly think that the idea of giving up everything implies the renunciation of duties necessary in relation to the body and the mind. Even such duties are not sense gratification if they're undertaken in the spirit of service to Krishna. So this is our Krishna consciousness movement. We're an educational movement. And in fact, today, you can be educated from preschool all the way to getting your PhD, the Krishna Conscious Curriculum. And you can learn different subject matters like that. So we have university education, Krishna Conscious education that you can get. So it's not that we're against, you know, certain knowledges, or we're just blindsided, just, you know, too spiritual. We can't understand anything material. So this is Krishna consciousness. It has complete knowledge. So it's not that we just understand a little bit about my body or my health or, you know, my family and my country, or we think we understand our land, you know, America or this planet. That isn't actually sufficient knowledge. Prabhupada said, no, that is not sufficient knowledge. You have to know many things. But if you understand Krishna, to understand Krishna means to understand everything. Krishna's tu bhagavato vignate sarvam idam vigyantam bhavati. So if you try to understand Krishna, then you will understand everything. And that's what Krishna, that's what we're saying. The Hare Krishna movement is saying that you try to understand Krishna through this Bhagavad Gita, through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's some very interesting, as we mentioned, King Kulshekar, he's a very intelligent king, and he had full knowledge. And let's just hear a few verses of what he has to say about his realizations. This is from the teachings of King Kulshekar. This body's beauty is fleeting, and at last the body must succumb to death. After its hundreds of joints have stiffened with old age, so why, bewildered fool, are you asking for medication? Just take the Krishna elixir, the one cure that never fails. So here, you know, the youth should be warned. It's not like, usually they're blind and they think that, you know, just this is all just for those old people that, you know, old timers. They don't understand. They don't know how to enjoy, you know, as we thought when we were younger. But actually, this is going to happen to all of us. But it's not very, as King Kulashekar is not holding any punches here. He's actually saying here, I drank the deadly poison of worldliness, pretending it was nectar. And now the sun is setting on the horizon of my life. So soon has old age arrived and all happiness departed. Racked by disease, troubled and weak, I find all my senses feeble now. My body wrecked and exhausted, and my spirits downcast to the absence of youthful pleasures. Since I lack even a particle of devotion and am devoid of all enlightenment, what help is there for me now? Only you, O Lord, O friend of the fallen, can help me. I am certainly fallen, the lowest of men. So please lift me up and place me at your lotus feet. So here, King Kulashekar is berating the foolish people that think that their only response to failing health is to just find some medication. Or to, you know, find a doctor that can give you some allopathic medicine. Maybe it might treat the symptom a little bit, but that will just simply cover those symptoms. The only medicine that actually can bring relief is this Krishna elixir, Krishna consciousness. So, actually he's saying how it's sheer folly to turn solely to these doctors in old age instead of to Krishna. We can even see in India, if you go to India today in Vrindavan, there's many old people. And they're practically bending over in a circle with old age. And they're circumambulating Govardhan Hill. They're chanting. They're doing so many prayers, austerities, because they know this is temporary. They're preparing for their next life to become more spiritually advanced, to go back to the spiritual world. Because they understand what hope is there. You know, trying to save this bag of flesh. So there's so much to say here. King Kulashekar's, if you ever get a chance to get that book, they have it. It's called the Mukundamala Stotra. So there's so many verses talking how intelligence is required to perform devotional service, especially to take up the chanting of the holy names. And in the 11th canto, there's this great Muni, Karabhajana Muni, he was talking to another great king. And he told him that in the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting of the holy names of God. And they worship of the incarnation of God who constantly sings the names of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. So intelligence is not gauged by our IQ examinations. But it's actually the ability to distinguish between the permanent and the temporary. The true from the false. The good from the bad. And to act on that understanding. That's real genuine intelligence. And we can only get that from hearing from a bona fide spiritual master and the authorized Vedic scriptures. So we're going on a nice journey here through some of the Vedic scriptures. So we have to have this sincere desire to get out. We actually have to be sincere. If we are sincere within and we really want to have complete knowledge, as we mentioned, Krishna is within the heart and he can actually help us. And he will guide us from within how to surrender. And he will send us someone who will help us. And this is what Arjuna realized. When Krishna left, was leaving, he actually had already left and Arjuna was bewildered and he was feeling all despondent and weak. He was actually defeated by some, you know, cowherd men. And he just was completely bewildered. But when he remembered Krishna instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, he completely became transformed. He realized that Krishna is actually here still in this form of this of his instructions. He's actually there. And that's what how Arjuna became relieved. And he understood that actually Krishna is everywhere. He's in his name. And as you more and more become advanced, you begin to realize how Krishna is everywhere. And that we can actually contact him now in this particular time. So it's a very simple process, Krishna consciousness. And Krishna says, just hear about me. Just simply hear this transcendental messages. Then you will automatically become pious. Even if someone just comes here and sits and listens, Prabhupada says, is described, that you will automatically become pious. And that you will actually begin to advance in Krishna consciousness. That is the simplicity of Krishna consciousness. So this is the purposes of Krishna consciousness. I don't know if any of you know that there are seven purposes of our movement. And the first one is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalances of values of life and achieve real unity and peace in the world. So this is our movement and that's our purpose. There are seven purposes. And here's another one here. To teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy names of God, as revealed in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and to erect for members and for society at large a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. So this is our purposes, and there's nice seven. We don't have time to go into every detail, but we're just kind of giving you a taste here today. So there are spiritual skills. Just as we learn the skill to simply tie your shoes in a different way, you can prevent them from coming loose. So in spiritual life, simply if we change the direction of our consciousness from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness, then we can make spiritual advancement. We can actually be saved and avoid this greatest blunder of losing this greatest profit of this human form of life. And that's to awaken. In a world, in the spiritual world, it's described in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You can awaken in a world where there's no need for electricity, no need for medicines. You know, there isn't the slightest inconvenience. What to speak of no death? And in loving, blissful association with the most attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead and his associates. So in the human form of life, just like my father, he gave me so much information, but it wasn't complete. So we're very fortunate. As human beings, we can have two fathers. We have this material father and a spiritual father. So that's a great opportunity. The spiritual father will teach us what the material father cannot. He can show us how to actually clean our brains. You know, how to intelligently live, how to intelligently die. Because, and then we learn that by dying, we actually attain our eternal life. So I'll end with this particular verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Mam upetya punarjanma dukhalayam asasvatam nan napnuvanti mahatmana samsidhim param gati. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. So Prabhupada gives a very nice and sweet short purport, which I'll read. And then we'll open up for discussion or comments. Purport. Since this temporary material world is full of miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, naturally he who achieves the highest perfection and attains the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, does not wish to return. The supreme planet is described in Vedic literature as Avyakta and Aksara, and param gati. In other words, that planet is beyond our material vision. It is inexplicable, but it is the highest goal, the destination for the Mahatmas, the great souls. The Mahatmas receive transcendental messages from the realized devotees and thus gradually develop devotional service in Krishna consciousness and become so absorbed in transcendental service that they no longer desire elevation to any of the material planets, nor do they even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet. They only want Krishna and Krishna's association and nothing else. That is the highest perfection of life. This verse specifically mentions the personless devotees of the Supreme Lord Krishna. These devotees in Krishna consciousness achieve the highest perfection of life. In other words, they are the supreme souls. Jai. So thank you very much. Any questions or comments? This is from the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I can't remember exact text. 15? 8:15. Yes. Yes. Are people that you see, if I understand your question, are people who don't suffer?
Some people are just lucky and don't have suffering. Does that make them clueless in some ways?
Well, that's actually a misperception on a lot of us. We always think that it's better on the other side, or that person's not suffering. But if you actually go into their head or their mind or their bodies, you will see that they really are suffering. Actually, this place is designed for a place to be suffering. It's described in the Bhagavad Gita. It's dukkhalayam asasvatam. It's temporary and it's a place of suffering. It's guaranteed.
Some people, by their own recollection, they're just lucky and they're not suffering. Maybe until they're very old, they suffer.
Yeah.
If a person just hasn't suffered yet, they've just been very, very lucky. Does that make them clueless in some respect?
In a sense, like I mentioned, like the young people, they feel that they could live forever, they can enjoy now, and, you know, don't worry about anything else. But that's like a hedonistic attitude. But eventually, that only lasts so long. Everything is temporary. Yeah. So healthy tomorrow, sick. I mean, healthy today, sick tomorrow. Or sick today, you may be healthy tomorrow. But if you take up the Krishna consciousness, it gives you the clue on how to never get sick, never get a material body, and never have to suffer these miseries again. So that's Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu. The question is the scriptures like the Quran and the Bible, are they considered Vedic? Is that your question? Well, anything that helps us get closer to Krishna, to develop love for God, that could be considered Vedic. One time someone asked Srila Prabhupada, is Joan of Arc something about in the Vedas or something? And Prabhupada says, why? I forget what the answer was, but he said that, you know, the Vedas include everything, you know. Vedic scriptures, everything is there. But it's the cheaters and the, you know, the charlatans and people that are misleading people, you know, that is what's the Vedic scriptures strongly, and the spiritual masters are very strong, they preach against. But yeah, there's many people that follow, you know, Prabhupada even said Jesus Christ is our guru. We follow. We're even more strict than Christians. So, yes, back there. So your question is it possible to transcend the three modes of material nature for a practicing devotee? Yes. Yes. Actually, it is only possible for the devotees to transcend the most mature nature. But the devotees, they deliberately keep themselves in the mode of goodness. Now, when you keep yourself in the mode of goodness, you can actually get spiritual power. And from that, you can advance beyond the modes of mature nature to Sudha Sattva, which is pure goodness. It's beyond the three modes of mature nature. And then, yes, that's how you transcend the modes of mature nature, is by taking up Krishna consciousness, following the basic techniques, the basic, as we learn our life techniques, you know. So we have our techniques in Krishna consciousness on how to keep yourself in the mode of goodness, eating properly, acting properly, living properly, so many different ways. You're deliberately putting yourself in the mode of goodness, and then you can transcend from there. But if you're in the mode of passion, then that'll keep you here. Prabhupada says at most you'll be able to, you'll probably just stay in, at best, Europe or America. You'll be born again. In the mode of ignorance, you may go down into the animal species, you know, become degraded. But even if you're in the mode of goodness and you don't advance, still there's no loss, because you may be advanced into the higher planetary systems. And from there you can make further advancement. But the devotee, he wants to go directly to Krishna. He doesn't want to be distracted in going to other planets, even higher planets, like that. So, any more questions or comments? All right, well, now they're serving some very wonderful Krishna prasadam across the street. So take that. That's the process of Krishna consciousness, is through the tongue, tasting nice food stuffs and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Thank you for your kind attention. All glories to Bhagavad Gita and Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Really?